Welcome to episode 174 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, Jen, and John. This week, we read To Be a Lantern by Dave Gibbons. And now, the cast begins.
Hey Jen, do you get Loot Crate?
What?
Do you get Loot Crate?
I don't know to what you are referring.
Like $15 a month and they send a box of nerdy shit to your house every month?
Oh no, I put a limit on my subscription boxes because I am bad about them.
Yeah, I'm getting bad about them. And I'm like, the first one that I got was a Titan one, and it was great because it was like Attack on Titan stuff and like Titanfall stuff. The second one was dragon themed, and it was full of a lot of like crap. The best thing in it wasn't dragon themed at all. The best thing was like this stress ball that's shaped like a D20.
That's cool.
But it also came with like a Game of Thrones like mystery mini thing. They're like those like Funko like weird funky looking head things, you know?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's random, and of course the one I get is fucking Joffrey. Shit. There's like anybody else on here would have been better. There's like three dragons. Of course, the rarest one is Khaleesi. But like, I would even take like one of the Stark kids. I know there's like three of the Stark kids in here. I can't tell who's who because they all look the same on the back of the box because they're all like misshapen and distorted. But yeah, no, I got Joffrey. Little shit.
Well, at least it wasn't Theon Greyjoy.
Oh God. Yeah, they don't make him.
I realized why I don't like him. And do you know the singer Lily Allen?
Yeah, yes. Familiar.
That's the guy who plays Theon Greyjoy is her little brother.
Oh my God, are you serious? Mm-hmm.
It's Alfie Allen.
Holy shit.
That was like, I realized this was the source of my intrinsic dislike of him from like the very get-go.
She just released a new song today.
Did she?
Yeah, I liked it.
I like her music, but I don't know. I've seen interviews with her, and she seems unpleasant.
Yeah, I could see that.
Let's see.
Yep, real talkative tonight. So, I also got this thing from Skyrim, but I haven't played Skyrim, so I don't know. It's a Nord.
You haven't played Skyrim?
No, and you know what the worst part is? I accidentally own two copies of it.
You should probably play Skyrim.
So I got, back in the day, I got a Bioshock 2 and Skyrim, like, double pack. So I have the disc, but I forgot that I owned it when Steam was having a summer sale, and I bought Skyrim on Steam. And coincidentally, the same thing also happened with Oblivion. So I have two copies of Oblivion and two copies of Skyrim, and I've played neither.
Oh my God.
I also bought Tomb Raider like a year ago and I still need to play that.
Dude, you need to play that game. Is amazing.
That's so good. That was my favorite game of that year.
Yeah. I think it might be better than the Uncharted series.
I mean, I've got a lot of good games that I bought because I know they're good games, but I just haven't played them. Like Borderlands 2, I bought.
I have that.
Deus Ex Revolution, Dragon Age.
I have that.
Oblivion, Skyrim. What else is on here?
Bioshock?
Yeah, Bioshock. I own all three. All three of them. I haven't played any. Portal 2. What else is there? Sins of a Solar Empire, which is supposed to be like an amazing real-time strategy. The Walking Dead. Torchlight. Haven't played Torchlight. I own it.
Ooh, have you played Wolf Among Us?
Nope.
Do you own it?
Nope.
You should get it.
Should.
It's Fable.
Oh, okay.
And the art's amazing.
Alright.
But,
Batman Arkham Asylum, Batman Arkham City, Mass Effect 3. I haven't finished 2 yet.
You should do the BioWare stuff.
I just buy these games because I know they're good, and I'll play them someday, I'm sure. I just need to get around to actually doing it.
My roommate Lucas has, like, 300 games on his Steam account, and he's played maybe 10% of them.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah,
he buys every indie game that comes out.
Yeah, Steam actually like came out with a thing saying like 25% of all games that they sell just go completely unplayed.
That's so sad. I don't doubt that at all.
I mean, it's sad, but I mean, it's great for the gaming industry.
you can look at
it that way. And it's proof that the digital model and sales work, you know? Like, people are willing to buy shit just because it's a good deal and then not ever fucking play it. And it's not like you're wasting CDs or anything. I'm sure there's a similar rate for, like, Xbox games.
Yeah.
You know?
We have a Gamefly account for the household. And it's amazing. Like, a disc will come. It will sit there for 2 months. No one will touch it. And then we're like, we should probably send this back.
Well, I mean, I guess it's better to have done it with Gamefly than to have just bought the game and let it sit there.
Yeah.
At least once you finally send it back, somebody else can enjoy it.
Granted, the only person who uses the account is the same roommate with 300 Steam games, so it's a habit, apparently.
Is Gamefly, like, same cost no matter what console you have, or would it be cheaper now with, like, having an Xbox 360?
I don't know.
I think it should be cheaper, right?
I think you can get games for multiple consoles. So, I think it's, like, flat rate, like Netflix.
Well, that's not good. I mean, yeah, I would probably buy into that if they did, like, a tiered thing. Like, you have, like, an older system with cheaper games, so we can do it that way, and it's no problem. I would dig on that. Because the other thing is, like, how much does it cost a month? It's, like, where is it? I have the thing up here.
Let's see. How much flat monthly fee of Jesus Christ? $22.95.
Yeah, see, no, fuck that. I'm cool.
Or for $15.95, one game at a time. No, thank you.
See, but that's the thing, is for most of the games I buy are $10 or less. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't really buy games unless they're on severe sale, because I know in a year and a half they're going to go on sale, and if I buy a game brand new, I'm probably not going to play it. The only game I paid full price brand new for in the last, like, 2 or 3 years was Saints Row 4, and I regret nothing. I regret none of that. That's my fucking favorite franchise of gaming ever.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, Steam has its sale 4 times a year, so yeah. You can get anything you want.
Oh, no. Steam Summer Sale.
It's coming.
Oh, crap.
I'm so happy. I'm going to buy so many games that I'll never play.
It's great. I love it.
I didn't buy anything for the spring sale.
I think I bought some stuff. I can't remember what it was, though, but I bought some stuff.
Yeah.
Should we start?
I guess.
Yeah.
What are we doing? We're recording a podcast about comics, right?
I guess. Something like that. Okay. I can't remember. I'm easily distracted.
What's it called again?
Bowling for Dollars?
Bowling for Dollars.
No, probably not that.
Okay, you guys ready?
Yep. Yeah.
Have I done Poozers before?
No.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another Poozer episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey!
And John again!
Ahoy hoy!
And this week, we read Green Lantern Corps to be a Lantern, written by Dave Gibbons with art from Patrick Gleason and Prentice Rollins. Who names their kids Prentice? Sorry, Prentice, if you're listening. It's an awesome name.
I love you, Prentice.
This collects episodes 1 to 6 of Green Lantern Corps from 2006. And so last week we read a story about our boy, well, my boy, Kyle Rayner. And this week we read a story about Kilowog and a bunch of other poozers.
we read all of the characters.
Yeah. There is this book has a large cast.
And, yeah.
And I just want to say, I like a lot of them. And I like the character like dynamics between a lot of them. And you know who they all need to say thank you to? Kyle Rayner. Just want to say that up front.
It's true. So we all know why.
Speaking of the large cast of characters, who was your favorite? Just start off with that.
Oh, you know what? We missed I'm looking at the list, and we missed who I think my favorite character is, and they play a small role, and they are the size of a planet.
Mogo!
I believe Mogo was my favorite character, just because he, much like Alan Scott in the last book, he's just kind of like, hey man, if you need help figuring out stuff, I'll be all wise and stuff, but you got to do it on your own. And he's just a nice little wise man with a bunch of O's. So many O's.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
That'd be Mogu in the notes.
But I just like how he didn't say much. You know, he helped a couple of characters, and now I'm totally... He helped Vath, and he helped...
Sora Neknatu.
Yes, he helped both of them through their rage issues and being afraid of fear, I guess. But he helped them, and I liked him the best. I'd say Natu would probably be my second favorite character, just from a development standpoint.
Yeah, he's always been one of the cooler Lanterns, too. Like, just... Like, there's a whole bunch of different aliens, like, oh, lizard this, and, like, you know, insect hero, and there's, like, a dog and a chipmunk, and, like, okay, these are just earth animals, but put a ring on it, you know?
Yes.
But, like, Mogo takes the creativity to a different step, and it's like, we'll just have it be this entire planet is an alien, a sentient planet.
With Lantern powers.
Yeah, and you know what's awesome? Do you know what his partner is?
A fly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
I love that. That's the biggest Lantern and the smallest Lantern.
Awesome.
What about you, Jen? Who is your favorite?
John stole my answer in its entirety. I will say, aside from Mogo, he was just too awesome. With all his, like, illusions and hallucinations and shit.
Yes.
Like, really good therapy. Natu was really good in this one. I really enjoyed her vengeful bitch moment. Where not with the doctors, as Ragnar is going to the executioner's block. Oh, she's like, oh yeah, I got this ring, and you see his face light up, and he's like, yes. Get to be a Lantern, and then she gives it to his sister, and then he dies. Like, oh man,
that was the best
justice possible. It was so cruel, but so deserved.
She is a complete badass in the I don't give a fuck way, and like the doctors too. Like, she goes back to Khuragar, and they go, "We're not gonna help you," and she goes, "Fuck it, I don't need your help." Yeah. He's like, I can make other doctors to help me with this and do what I need them to do. Get the fuck out.
I also like how she just set all of her stuff on fire with no qualms. She's this is my old life.
She like, killed it with fire.
Like, fuck this. You don't need a Lantern. This Lantern doesn't need you, bitches. I'm going to get the fuck out of here.
But yeah, she was really cool in this one. And they featured her well, like... There was, I think, great potential for her to be very emo and whiny, and it didn't happen at all, ever. So that was, like, a huge positive, I think.
Yeah, yes. There are a couple moments where she's in tears. Like, when you first see her on Mogo, you get a close-up of her boob.
Yeah,
there's a tear on her boob. I don't know. I think it was, like, it was a poor art decision, I think.
Yeah, that was a failure of juxtaposition is what that was.
Favorite though, I also put this was one of my favorite scenes, and then I was like, oh, of course it had to have this. Like, couldn't they have done a close-up of a ring or
I think it was
anything else.
I think it was just like a really bad, like, wasn't like the top panel like a shot of Mogo?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you and see then, Mogo and he's round, and then you get another shot like to something smaller and round, but it's a tit.
It's all glow.
With a single teardrop.
Yeah.
Single tear boob. Oh, God. And it's like, you know, she's such a strong character. And her uniform is not any more exploitative than any other character in tights, necessarily. I mean, she's got, like, the deeper cut on the top, but, you know, that might be a personal choice that she makes. I mean, she's a Lantern, whatever, and it's not like it's super cleavagey. It's not like it's a boob window. But, like, then you gotta do this.
Yeah.
Like, there was no problems about girls in comics in this until you got to that, like, those three panels, and you're just like, okay. Yeah, round things. Planets and boobs.
You think, like, a note they got, and it was, like, all on the paper, like, draw more attention to the boobs. It's just, like, circled and underlined in red pen.
You
like,
know,
God damn it.
But you know what's fucking stupid, John? Is you're making that joke, but apparently that kind of shit actually does happen at DC.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
It's fucking terrible. Like,
what the heck? I know.
Oh, Christ.
Classy.
You know, I really do want to, like, be all controversial and be like, my favorite character was Vath or Izamot or Salak, but they're all kind of lame after Guy Gardner. Fucking love Guy Gardner.
Yeah, Guy.
I love that this guy shows up on a fucking beach, right? With a fucking, like, axe and giant-ass fucking sword and starts going after Guy, and Guy's like, it's cool, bitch. I'll just go get my ring and we're fine.
Yeah.
But, like, he doesn't lose his shit at all. He's yeah. like, there's nothing about him that's... I love the way that different Lanterns manifest their willpower. And Guy Gardner, I think, is the best manifestation of it. It's just sheer, boundless confidence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Hal is a cocky motherfucker, and that's his, like, manifestation. He's a cocky douchebag, you know. And I guess you could say John is, like, his willpower is, like, the overcoming struggle willpower kind right. of a thing. Guy Gardner just is unbounding confidence. You could put Guy Gardner with no ring and have him be, held in Galactus's hand, and Guy Gardner would be confident that he could beat the shit out of Galactus.
Yeah.
It does not
he
matter.
Would. He would find a way.
Or he would just get squashed, but until the moment he died, Guy Gardner would be confident that he could win this fight.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I love it. And I love in, like, his jacket, or his, like, it's almost like a Hawaiian shirt, kind of, the way it fits, but it's not Hawaiian patterned at all. When he's on vacation, it's got yes. the same, like, collar as his jacket. My bro's got a style, and he sticks to it.
Yes, he does.
So nobody liked the racist partners, Vath and Izamot?
They were okay. Izamot was fine until he got into, like, the weird mating thing.
That was the worst. And,
yeah.
That was so terrible.
I feel like... Oh, go on. Sorry.
I was just going to say, those two clearly had some issues with each other that they didn't even really work out.
Yeah.
To the extent of where we left off. Vash was just like a hothead, and I don't know. Right off the bat, they were just punching each other and not talking to each other. Everything that probably partners should not do.
I mean, do you guys know the background between Ran and Thanagar, where the two planets where they're from?
A little.
Not really, but I can assume that they do not like each other.
Yeah, they have been warring for a very long time.
They've been at the war.
Yeah, they've been very, very bitter enemies. And, like, on the one hand, you want to say, like, go Guardians for saying it doesn't matter what species you are. If you can overcome fear, you can be a Lantern, and the sector you patrol is going to be the sector you're from. So one of you happens to be Renin, and the other one happens to be Thanagarian, and you guys are just the best of the sector, so go at it, buddies. But, like, you want to, like, say, rah, rah, doesn't matter. But then you're also like, that was really fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Come on, you couldn't, like, pick the best and then, like, the third best and just let the second best chill until one of them dies?
Yeah, basically.
It could have been fine if they had resolved it better, but I feel like a lot of the tension didn't feel real because of the situation they were put in. Because if he had just come and everyone was, like, racist towards Vath, I think it would have been better. But then we also had this weird, like, it's mating season, but they're being attacked subplot. or I guess main plot in this case. And it just, I feel like it was a huge detractor because it almost seemed like they were trying to be, I don't know, it felt like a tarot moment in that it was just this projection of what someone who's never been out in society assumes is a male fantasy.
Yeah.
Where you're like called to save the universe, but then your girlfriend's like, no, we have to do it right now or else. Right? Or
we have to do it within this, we have to do it within this 20-minute window.
While my house is on fire.
Yeah.
And it's like you're being shelled from space. And I just, that's not an impossible choice I'm interested in reading about. It was dumb. It was just really, really dumb. And if they had just left it at racism, that would have been fine. If they had left it with, like, with the attack on the planet, sure. But it made it so silly. And then when it didn't resolve, it went from being silly to being stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see what they're trying to do here. I can kind of see it. And it's because it's not just about, like, the mating and the racism. It also ties into them being partners, right? So Vath has two big problems, right? A, he's a fucking rage monster. And B, he's hella racist, right? And he goes and talks to Mogo, and he resolves to get over his anger problem. Now, not a word is said about his racism. He's just gonna get over his anger problem, right? And so the entire time that you read up until you get to those couple scenes, you see that Vath, like, is just, like, almost irrationally angry and racist at Izamot for, like, never being there. He keeps having to call Izamot. Like, it's just, if you would just fucking be there, if you would just shut up and be where you're supposed to be, I wouldn't have a problem with you, and I wouldn't get angry, and I wouldn't be racist. If you would just quit sucking, I wouldn't hate all of your people. Right? And so he just comes off looking fucking terrible for so much of this. He's a... Fuck that guy, really. He looks terrible. Until you get to that scene, and you're like, okay, Izamot, I get it that it's mating season, and you have, like, some urge and stuff, but if you're getting shelled from outer space, none of that fucking matters. And then you kind of see, like, maybe Izamot is not really 100% committed to his duty. And maybe some of Vath's anger is justified. Not the racism, of course, but anger.
But the anger of him not doing his duty. And he actually says to him, he says, if she's not going to wait, it's probably not worth it. Let's go into space and stop everyone from being murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, I get, like, the idea of, like, mating and all this and that, and that's probably because I watch a shitload of Star Trek and they have Ponfar and all that kind of stuff in there. But, like, it's just, there's got to be some rational part in your mind still, Izamot. If you're down here having sex and you die doing it, it doesn't matter that you had sex. Not one little bit. Get up there and fucking get at them. And if your girlfriend, that's your love, all of a sudden over the last, like, 2 days, not, like, goes and sleeps with somebody else, fuck it, you're alive, she's alive, and your race propagates, and you can have sex next mating season, I guess.
My notes for this were Azumut's girl is down for the sex, and, like, now, even though everything is blowing up, she has to mate right that second or never. Like, and then they get back. And it's probably been like an hour, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, my bad. You took too long. And then he's like, I'm going to murder everyone, maybe? I don't know. We don't know.
I mean, that's where you have to write off so much of this just being like alien biology. I don't know how it works. I'm only human. You know, like, you got to write off so much of it to that. But I think what they were trying to do is show that Izamot really can be super indecisive and not dedicated to his duty, and that not all of Vath's rage problems are completely unjustified.
And that they're all that important to their partnership. Like, he's like, oh, you need to get your anger issues under control, when that's, like, the least of their partner problems.
Yeah. Before any of that, they have to get over their mutual racism.
Yes, that's the first thing.
Which, you know, I mean, for all of Aizamot's flaws, that's not one of them. I don't think he minds at all that his partner is Rannian. Well, maybe not that he doesn't mind at all, but he's willing to put it aside for the sake of the Lantern Corps.
I think part of what was frustrating about the whole thing is Vath came off as, like, more racist at the start because, you know, he's calling his partner and he doesn't show up, and then Aizamot finally comes and it turns out he was saving some planets and doing things and was, like, legitimately busy doing his job. Mm-hmm. And I think Vath, like, says a couple racial slurs or something and then punches him.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, Aizamot's a stand-up guy and Vath needs to fix his anger issues, but then we see Aizamot, like, it seems like a complete turnaround.
Yeah.
And they also, I don't know, it seems like they're dealing with animal urges, but then they try to humanize it with him saying, oh, we're in love?
I don't know, the
we're in love part seemed really dumb considering that she was...
Worst panel in the entire comic was the cheesy, like, we're in love, and then their tails make a freaking heart.
Yeah.
Oh, see, my God.
No, that's, I entirely believe that was on purpose, and that's supposed to be that, like, moment where you look at that panel and you go, oh, bullshit. That's where you're in Vath's mind. Like, Vath is looking at that and going, oh, bullshit.
Yeah.
You are not in love. You are just really fucking horny.
Oh, man. That was horrifying.
And just the look on their faces, it's like the lizards, like, smiling. It's so fucking... Ugh.
It looks like the you mad bro face. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, a bit.
Well, that's enough for tonight, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, we're set. We're good. Till next week, everybody.
All right, bye.
Bye.
So, in the other, what I want to talk about here is, through the course of this comic, Guy Gardner moves into almost like a leadership role. And you really can't tell in this trade based on his interactions with the other people in this comic. Like, he is just constantly... I want to talk about the evolution of his character, because we've read him before for things like Justice League International, where Batman decks him in one punch because he fucking deserves it. you know? But, like, here, even though he's still cocky and more than a little bit of an asshole, he at least understands the burden of what he has to do. Right? Like, the first, I love that first panel that you see him too. It's just like he's right in your face.
Raging out.
It's fucking scary and awesome at the same time. And he's just raging about his needing his shore leave, except he doesn't take it. He realizes that even though he deserves a shore leave much as anything else, he goes and helps Natu with her problem first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's evolved as a character to the point where he's still the same person he should be, but he's willing to take on the responsibilities associated with his role in the Honor Guard, whatever that means. I don't know. It's just some title that he's like, he doesn't have a sector. He kind of floats around. And then he does like a whole investigation and shit before he ends up, getting his shore leave.
Well, before he just ends up taking off, basically.
Yeah, well, you know, he's still Guy Gardner.
Yeah.
So you guys want to talk about that investigation at all? Like that whole storyline with, what's the guy's name? Ragnar?
Prince Ragnar.
Prince Ragnar.
Yeah, let's talk about Prince Ragnar, this crazy fanboy of the Green Lanterns.
I know. I can only imagine, like Guy Gardner walking into that shrine, like, oh boy.
We need to lock you up right now.
This is creepy, bro.
So that's kind of where they start out, right? They, Natu and, Mert, is it?
Yeah, Mert.
Yes. Thank you, crazy alien names. And they're just fighting with, what planet? Yeah, just take over, because I don't know what planet
they were on. Batrasis fighting some mechs.
There Although, you go.
I'm not entirely sure. The only way that I knew that they were mechs is because it told me. The art was really fucking busy early on, and I couldn't actually make out any mechs. I'm sure they're in there. I don't know if that's the coloring or the penciling. I don't know, but it just came off real fucking busy. But that's where it starts off. And then Natu fucking just, like, because...
Well, one of the guys gets killed.
A yellow gun comes through her barrier and kills the other prince, the older prince. And she fucking wigs out and goes AWOL.
She's like, oh, my ring's cursed. Peace out, everyone. And Mert's like, what?
He's just fucking stuck there.
Yeah.
Holding, having to hold shit down on his own. And then they get to Kilowog. Kilowog calls her Poozer, sends her back with Guy. And I love the first thing Guy does when he shows up. You know what he does? He makes a giant construct of himself and puts it in the fight. Yep.
He had some good ones in this.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Well, they get back, but it's too late.
Yeah, Mert's dead.
Mert be dead.
Which we find out later. I don't know. This is the thing with Mogo and his, like, and his things that he shows people. Like, I don't know where those come from, because, like, we eventually get that.
Yeah,
because he, like, when Natu goes back to Mogo, Mogo shows her, like, a vision of Mert, and Mert says, it's my own fault, I was drinking anyway, and, you know, like, this, that, and the other thing, and I was poisoned, and I should have been smarter about it, and it cost me my life, you know, and eventually my mom will get over it.
Yeah, I almost, you know what, and that does bring up a good point about Mogo, like, how does he project that? Is he just getting their thoughts and telling them what they want to hear?
Yeah, or is that, like, does he actually know about Mert? Because, like, from my perspective, Mert would be like, I just fucking held up this planet for 24 hours after my partner fucking went AWOL on me. I deserve a goddamn beer.
Well, and he might not poison. Say that, like, after he died.
True. Right? Yeah.
Like, he seemed more caring than that. He seems like he'd try to comfort her.
Right. Yeah, but it makes me wonder where those visions come from. If they come from what Natu needs to hear, or if they come from actual, like, Mogo being big enough to fuel the threads of the universe, whatever hippie bullshit allows him to see Mert's thoughts beyond the grave.
Well, I mean, either way, Mogo shows people what they need to see.
Yeah.
Whether it's real or comes from, like, mind reading or some shit.
Yeah. And I think in the end, that's probably why they don't care too much to look into it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, everybody comes and gets what they need, so who cares?
Yeah. So, what, Mert's dead. Ragnar's like, let me help you. I want to be a lantern guy. And he's like, whatever, fine. And then she's doing the autopsy on him, and then he's poisoned with something that intensifies his fear. Was that what his...
Yes. It was like microbes that attacked his amygdala?
Sure.
It showed him scary ghosts. I don't know.
It's the scarecrow gas.
Yes.
Basically.
From across the universe.
But when Guy is able to track down another lead, he's taken Ragnar with him, and Ragnar fucking murders him and says, oh, he had a weapon. Which, come on, Ragnar.
Ragnar!
you couldn't come up with something better than that. He had another, like, weapon.
What? He didn't even have a weapon. Like, Guy had him in a giant fist, and then he just came and stabbed him. I was like,
Way this guy seems kind of shitty. I was not suspicious until you did that, Ragnar. I thought you were a fucking stupid fanboy.
And then I believe she goes and finds another lead, and she gets, I believe it's chlorovenomed.
Yes.
Chlorovenomed. And she dead.
But not.
Well, I guess we'll get there.
Yeah.
She did.
Spoilers.
I was like, wow, everyone's dying. I was like, this is crazy.
I mean, that's what you can do when you have an unlimited number of characters.
Yeah, right?
How many sectors of space? That's how many characters you have, but double it.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, in the later issues, in my notes, it's like, and then these two did this. then on this planet, it was like every other panel was like switching back and forth between like these 18 characters. And I was like, oh my goodness, it's a lot of things going on.
So they eventually fool Ragnar by having Natu, quote unquote, in quotation marks, or in, what's fucking words, in air quotes, Natu's ring show up at his face and tell him, we have chosen you to be a Green Lantern, come to Oa.
Yeah.
And then just trick him into coming right to the holding cell.
Yeah.
Which, oh, Guy Gardner.
Guy greets him and basically says, LOL JK, we tricked your dumb ass. That's what I wrote.
You in jail now.
You in jail.
Guy Gardner's the best.
But, yeah, he tries to leave and Natu kicks his ass. And then that wet blanket comes and tells them that they have diplomatic immunity.
Salak?
Yeah. See, I called him the wet blanket.
Okay, see, you know what, though, is you say that, but I think Salak knows. And I think he's way more vicious than he lets on. Right? Because he knows that if Ragnar stays here, Ragnar will live into old age.
Yeah.
Sinestro is in one of those cells.
Yes.
Sinestro will die of old age. And Sinestro has killed how many people? Only because he got taken into custody by Lanterns. He will get to die of old age. I think Salak knows sending him home will get him killed, and Salak would rather have this guy get killed than let him live.
Yeah, but I like calling him a wet blanket. Because he won't let Guy talk to the Guardians.
Yeah, well, nobody gets to talk to the fucking Guardians. Well, apparently dying from being snooty bitches before didn't help them overcome being snooty bitches. You got murdered for this! Hal Jordan came and killed all of you, and you know what you did? You just fucking stood there. And
well, see, that's what happens when you let people talk to the Guardians.
That's true. You get murdered. Oh, boy.
And then later on, of course, he gets Guy Gardner's shore leave with the two androids.
Hey, yes,
tiger that was women. Excellent.
Android tiger women. Oh, yeah.
I like how they're like, oh, you have four hands. That's right, ladies. Two for each of you. Which I think that, Jen, is the idea of space fantasy.
That was actually the scene that made me like Salak.
Yeah.
Like, before that, I was like, this guy's a douche. But then after that, he was a likable character.
I like the scene where he's talking to Killwonka and he's, like, smelling a flower.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I think that flower was in one of the women's hair.
Yes.
Oh, was it? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
He got it from one of them.
Oh, man. So they take him back to the home planet, to the home base. And he gets executed, but before he gets executed,
the best thing in this comic
happens. Someone take it. I feel like you guys can do this justification and how awesome this scene is. Do you just want me to do it?
I think you got this.
Guys, so basically, they're like, we're gonna murder you. And he's like, that's fine. I went crazy. And they're like, we don't care. We're still gonna, like, cut your head off. And Natu goes, wait a second. I have something to say. And she holds up the ring and she says, oh, it's chosen who will be the new owner. And he's like, oh, is it me? And she's like, nah, it's your sister. And then he looks hella sad and they cut his head off. And one of the most baller moves ever.
You know what?
I'm so disappointed. And now my head is gone.
I love that even more because Natu could have done that at any number of points, but she waited. Because how does Salak phrase it? Like, you'll know the right time kind of a thing.
Yeah, but
she waited until Ragnar came out, and Ragnar gave the speech that kind of, in front of the eyes of his people, maybe, yes, gave him a little bit of redemption. Like, he says, I see now that what I did was truly insane, and I am apologetic for what I have done to my kin and my people, and and I deserve what is coming for me, but I have seen the light, and I will die a just, honorable death. Right? Except then, the very next panel, she takes all of that away from him. And, like, and shows that if he could have the ring today, if he could have the ring the very next moment after saying it, he would ignore having said all of it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
She shows in that moment that he might recognize that he's insane, but he still is insane, and he doesn't regret a single penny or ounce of what he has done.
Yeah.
And so therefore, like, as a reader, you're free to just be completely happy with that head coming off.
Yes.
Like, don't worry about his not being in prison. He would have been crazy like this till the end of days.
The thing I thought that was weird is, how did they know who the ring was going to choose? Is that, am I totally off in thinking that they don't really know at most points?
I'm guessing the ring just must have communicated it to her ring? I don't know.
Because that seemed just, like, really weird to me, because I don't think I've ever...
Because ordinarily, right, doesn't the ring, like, kind of just come off the finger of the dead person and just fly around the sector until it finds somebody?
Yeah. So that's why I thought it was really weird that he said, Salak said, bring it to the next bearer, you'll know who it is. But how do they, I don't know.
Well, I mean, Ragnar did kind of murder everyone else who was worthy.
That's true.
So what, she could just put it on whoever the fuck she wanted and it'd be just fine?
I guess, I mean...
Or maybe she just was standing in that moment and was like, I know what would piss him off the most. The most.
Yes.
That could be it.
Man, the saddest part is he never once realized why the ring would never choose him.
Yes.
Yeah. Up until the very end, he still didn't get it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we had the orange ring, he probably would have got it.
Which one's that one? No, that's the green, right?
I can never say his name. Larfleeze or whatever?
Yeah,
Larfleeze.
Yes.
We're going to have to do War of the Light after we do Sinestro Corps.
I'm here.
You'll be down for that?
I would be down for that. Lots of stuff happens in that. But let's talk about this one.
So what's the other part we haven't talked about in this yet, then? The stuff on ranks? Ranks?
Ran X?
I say ranks in my head, not ranks. But when I speak it all comes out the same.
I mean, that was kind of brief. I mean, guy gets sent there as punishment.
we cut your shore leave short. We're going to punish you.
We're going to punish you and send you with Thos. He had, like, the longest name ever. And guy's like, I'm just going to call you Thos because...
Okay, bro.
Your name is full of vowels, and I don't know what's happening.
Fuck that name, bro.
Because fuck your name that was given to you at birth.
I'm going to call you Thos.
And they, what, like the planet's sentient or something like that?
Oh, it's a floating city.
Ah.
It's like Mogo, but it's a city.
And it's pissed off, so it's nothing like Mogo.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of Mogo. Mogo is, like, unpopulated and serene and peaceful and super nice. And Ranks is, like, used to be this urban metropolis and really fucking angry and all dredgy and shitty now.
And hates Green Lanterns.
Yeah.
He hates them.
Which, like, okay, bro, I don't, like, understand the city's thinking. You get too big, and then you get greedy, so they reroute the trade stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it has the ability to move itself, because it moved itself into this nebula, where it just, like, is home to, like, seedy people. But couldn't he just as easily have moved himself right back into the new trade lines?
Yeah, right?
Just planted himself right in the fucking middle again? Like, I don't understand these things. Like, just, if you want, learn your lesson, move back into the trading area, and just be cool with it. Like, I don't know. It just seems, the city's very stupid.
It made it sound like it was kind of feeding off the people, but it was unclear.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, if it had just really clearly been like, oh, the city feeds off of people or like literally eats them or something, and don't go there, anybody, that seems like a far better explanation. But they didn't do that, so... Yeah.
So then, Guy Gardner basically goes in and starts to lobotomize it.
Yeah, that I was like, all right. They just go to the center and it's like, I'm gonna take your brain cords out until you tell me where this kidnapped lady is.
Yeah, I really like how smooth Boss was about it, though, because he seems like a bumbling, you know, overly erudite idiot.
Yes.
Does that term work? I guess, but
no, it works.
He just like goes with it. He totally knows what Guy means when he wants to play like bad cop and not really good cop, and that surprised me. So it was fun watching them interact, at least.
Yeah, and
they had a good dynamic.
Yeah, I honestly don't remember what that crap is about the Order of the White Lobe.
Oh, I don't know. That's lost on me.
I mean, I that might come up again. I know I've read, like, this whole run. So I know I've read the resolution of it before, but I don't recall.
Well, it sounds like the White Lobe was the city's brain? Question mark? Is that what we were shown at the end?
No, the weird bald man in a stripper outfit explodes.
Yeah, he explodes.
Okay.
He explodes and he says, what does he say? In the name of the White Lobe.
But then we got that really ominous, like, full page spread at the end that shows, like, a brain. Right?
There's like four panels coming into the city. And then you get, like, the city's brain, like, saying, how they have humiliated me this time, I shall have revenge on all
it's,
of them.
It's basically his, I'll get you gadget next time.
Yes.
Okay. I, like, tried too hard to tie them together, I think.
Yeah, it's not not that complex.
Oh, well.
Yeah, in the name of the White Lobe. And then, explosion.
Yeah, that guy was really, That was ugly. That guy just made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, I was like, ugh, what's happening here?
It was the fishnet.
Yeah.
That was the bad part.
And like the monk kind of haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of these plots that are just... Not good times, apparently.
No, yeah. Everyone's blowing up. Velociraptors are having sex with other velociraptors that aren't their girlfriends. It's crazy. Crazy times.
We get, like, a whole bunch of different partners. Like, Vath and Izamot never cross paths with Guy Gardner and Soranuk Natu and all of them. Like, yeah. They don't cross paths, ever. And we get a whole lot of, like, different storylines coming through here. Is there any sense of them working together or any anticipation of them ever coming together for some larger story? Or does it feel, at this point, like, just kind of, not frantic, but maybe frayed?
It just seems like there's a lot going on, and it doesn't really seem like, besides Guy and maybe Kilwog and Natu, there's really not a bond that would bring them all together. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I know this, how long is this run? And it's like 50, or it's longer than that. It's like 100 and something, right?
It's pretty long. It goes all the way through the War of Light and all of that stuff.
Yeah, so, but at this, at the point where we stopped reading, there's no, you don't get a sense that they're all going to team up and do some good together. But you don't get that sense because, like, they just had their own separate storyline, and then everybody else kind of was, I don't know. It just, I did not get the sense that they were going to get together and
hang out,
fight evil.
Yeah, I was actually about to cite a scene, but then I realized it was from Sinestro Core War. So, nope.
Till next week.
But yeah, this was very... it was not coherent as an overarching story. And I mean, that's to be expected because it's kind of the start and you don't want to show all your cards too soon. But at the same time, I feel like this is not a good way to deal with an ensemble cast.
No, not at all.
Because people felt like really random and pointless. I could have done entirely without... See, I can't even remember their names without going to the notes. That's Vath the issue. And Vath and Izamot, exactly. And I just feel like if there's characters that you can totally throw away, and if you intend to have them be part of a main storyline, you need to work them in better than that. Like, at the very least, they could have had them interact with someone else or have their story somehow connect to any of the other things, but... I mean, it seems like Mogo and Guy Gardner are the two kind of points where people convene, but it's not related enough to make anything hold.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more just like 6 degrees of Guy Gardner.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's the... It's a big difficulty that I think they set themselves up for when they envisioned how this comic would play out. Because eventually this title runs into things like Sinestro Core War and the War of Light and things that affect the entire core all at once. But before you do that, you want to show what life is like in the Green Lantern Corps. Sorry, you want to just show what everyday like is life in the Green Lantern. They're fucking words. You want to show what everyday life is like in the Green Lantern Corps. And in order to do that, you can't just show Guy Gardner, who's the honor guard, and Kilowog, who's like the sergeant trainer, and then Sornaknatu, who is like one of the everyday life people, but who's going through this really, like, her partner dies, and this is really dramatic. You also want to show, like, Vath and Izamot are not saving the universe. They are not. They're not under some intrigue with their partner dying. They're just both a little bit racist. One's got a lazy problem and one has an anger problem. And, like, they're in here to show you, I think, what everyday life in the core is supposed to be like. You even see Vath going to, like, his local precinct for a fucking coffee and donut.
Yes.
You know?
Where no one can remember how to say his partner's name.
Right. Like, that scene is important because it shows, like, this is just... what his job is like for him. This is just what he does for a living, you know? And there's no intrigue with partner dying in this great, like, NCIS storyline that Sornaknatu gets, you know? He's just going from one planet to the other, putting out whatever fire he can, and then getting all racist and angry with his partner. And so you need to show that. You can understand the total depth of what happens when things like the Sinestro Core War and the War of Light happen. Because if you just think everything that happens in space is a giant war with a shit ton of lanterns that that changes the fate of the galaxy, then you're misinformed about what the Green Lantern Corps is supposed to feel like.
Right.
For the majority of the lanterns who are in the Corps. And so it's like, you gotta balance those two. So you gotta show that this is what everyday life is, but you also have to make it interesting. But if it's really disjointed, even if you make it interesting, I don't know if as a reader you care. Like, Vath and Izamot, I think, are kind of interesting storyline, but I don't know how much you care. Because they're not as interesting as Sword Ignato and Guy Gardner, and I care about them. Mm-hmm. So
even Mert was more interesting. And he wasn't even there that long.
No, he just got to go, "What the fuck, Sornik?" And she flew away.
Yeah. But I felt for him. I didn't feel for Voth and Asimov at all. Like, I was just kind of like, you guys are stubborn assholes. Get your shit together.
Which, I mean, I think, you know, they'll have to.
Yeah.
When the Sinestro Corps comes along, and they'll have to get over their shit or they're going to die.
Yeah.
So, but that's for next week. Let's talk about the art, and then we'll wrap this bitch up. What did you guys think of the art of this comic?
It's very colorful.
I liked it a lot more than
last week.
Than last week's.
Yeah, everybody had believable faces. Even the dinosaur had a better face.
Yes. I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. I didn't really have... I mean, I do agree with you guys. The first one was pretty... was pretty not good. It was pretty... Yeah. It wasn't pretty.
Yeah, I think it's... I think the artist just had to find their footing. You know, like, it starts out really busy... and all kinds of bright colors all over the place, but eventually it kind of calms down. And that really busy just transitions into kind of a lot of detail. And by the end, it works. Like, by issue 6, it settled in, and it knows itself, and it works for me.
The change of setting helped a lot, too, because I feel like having a battle be really, really busy and, like, having a plot that relies on use of color, I didn't quite get that the mechs were yellow and that was the problem. Like,
oh, I didn't even, yeah.
Like, it didn't occur to me because it was so busy. So I think if you're drawing focus to the color, you have to simplify a little and kind of have one or two things stand out. Whereas instead of being like, you know, black, yellow, and green, it was black, yellow, purple, green, red. And it was just a bit too much to like allow the reader to easily take it in and understand like what the heck was happening. But once we got to the resort area,
yeah,
like that felt really right for this style of art. Yeah. Because, I mean, it's a tropical paradise with babes and Guy Gardner, and it should be colorful. It should be busy. And I think it's just the setting. Because busy in, like, a living city works really well, too, I think. Because it's supposed to be confusing and maze-like.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I don't know, busy during space explosions, sure. So, I think by the end, they kind of got more into the swing of the context of everything, and that helped. But part of it was just knowing what was happening visually was so important in those first few pages that because it was too busy, it threw off how I, like, even perceived the story. I just didn't quite get what was happening.
Yeah.
What you said. I don't know. I liked it.
No, I agree. And I really liked the art, too. But I did see some problems here and there. You know what was funny? I really... for some reason, enjoyed how the coffins looked in this.
Hmm.
I thought they were drawn very well. I don't know why. I was just like, oh, these look pretty cool. I wouldn't mind be burying in that. That'd be cool.
Put it in your will, John.
I will, right now.
Do it, because you have a will. I know you do.
I don't. Did you guys have any scenes that, like, stood out? Because I have like two. I really like the scene when Natu brings the power battery to Mert's parents. I thought that was really, I don't know, I just thought it was a really well done scene where obviously you have both sides of the grieving parent and then the parent that's like, look, this sucks, but I would like that battery.
And I'm sure she'll eventually stop being in mourning. I don't know. I just thought it was nice. I don't know why. I just thought it was a nice scene.
Yeah, it was a really good little scene. It very nicely gave closure to that storyline. Yeah. And it really shows that the other reason I really like that scene, too, is from a story perspective, like, do you even really want to be a Lantern? Like, the ring chooses you.
Yeah.
And once it's on you, you're going to Oa. It takes you there, whether you want to go or not.
Exactly.
And then how does this choice affect your family? Because odds are, you're going to die. You're a Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Odds are you're not going to live to be very old. And so I like that it brings that up, but it also shows you that the majority of the people in this galaxy appreciate the duty and the sacrifice involved with being a Lantern. And you show what it means to not only the people in the world, but also the Lanterns in the world, too. That is a really good scene. What about you, Jen?
I really liked when Vath went to visit Mogo and he saw his dead comrades.
Yes.
Oh, and you could see their faces were deformed, you know, and they were clearly, like, you know, just... what's the word? Disfigured in battle. And it finally gave Vath something resembling depth. I'm not going to say, like, it made him deep or anything, because I don't think we got that for him. But it's like, you first see him and he has the scars on his face, and, you know, like, you could say, oh, that's just comics trying to show that he's a tough guy, because tough guys have scars. But then you see that scene and you get the sense that actually maybe he has really seen battle and it's been traumatizing for him. And, like, I don't know, it just made him more into a real person, and he really needed that in this trade. So I really liked that.
And that scene has added depth if you know about the history between the people, like his people and his partner's people, because then you get the sense that those people were killed by his partner's people.
Yeah.
And so you get a whole lot of, like, PTSD meets I work with that guy. And it's like, you really want to be pissed, and you really can't be pissed, and that you can't be pissed makes you more pissed.
Yeah, it's a real mindfuck. Yeah.
And then you can almost go to the point where maybe he cares about Isamot so much that when he finally comes and to help him, and he's just kind of dicking around. He wants him to just be serious about it because he doesn't want him to die.
Yeah.
I mean, that could also be a thing. I mean, just tell your partner you love him, bro. It's cool.
But he can't because he's racist.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's what's missing from this comic. It's bromance.
Yeah.
We need better bromance.
There needs to be some bromance.
I will tell you right now. If you keep reading this, Kyle Rayner shows up, and Kyle and Guy get one hell of a bromance on. If you want to keep reading, it gets worth it.
I mean, but that's fine, because I would expect that from them, but...
You want to bat an Isamot?
I need some character growth from those two, because honestly, they could die right now, and I wouldn't care.
Aw. But yeah, it's true. Also, Kilowog and Mogo have a bromance.
That's true.
They're pretty good. They're pretty close bros.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any others off the top of my head. I got two scenes that stuck out. One, it's stupid, but it's when the other two Lanterns show up to help Vath with, like, the thing that's coming up. And
the water.
Yeah.
It's gonna kill the bug people.
As Vath flies away, one of the Lanterns makes a construct of Vath and says, "Oh, thank you very much for helping me."
Yes, that was a good scene. Just because it's like he's trying really hard to not let these bug people get, like, destroyed by water, and then some other Guardians come along, and he's like, "All right, bye," and just leaves.
Yeah,
he's like, "I gotta get back, bye."
I mean, really, it highlights that Vath has a shitty sector, and apparently these two got fuck all nothing to do in their sector.
Yeah, right.
And, like, life is easy for those schmucks. I got shit to do so much that I don't have time for your pleasantries. Like, they have... These other two schmucks show up, and they expect all the pleasantries, because they have that much fucking time on their hands.
Yeah, right.
Right? And so it does a good job of kind of highlighting that, you know, like, very slyly. The other one that shows up for me is that full page after Guy Gardner, like, throws the net over a... What's the guy's name? Bullfunga?
But we didn't really even talk about Bullfunga.
Yeah. Well, he throws the net over Bullfunga's head, and then there's a full page of Bullfunga, like, kneeling, trying to get the net off his head, and yeah. Guy is there in, like, his power lantern pose, except he's wearing, like, fucking swim trunks and his open shirt thing. He's, like, there in his power pose, but all up in vacation clothes. And you're like, yeah, that is Guy Gardner. I like that one because that's just a really good visual encapsulation of who that man is.
Yeah, he's just will never stop being a badass. Yeah.
Do we need to talk about Bullfunga? He's just kind of...
No, he's just a guy that, I mean, he was there. Who cares?
He wants to steal a ring.
He mad, bro.
That two-headed guy, going to throw him the ring. Guy Gardner gives him the stiff arm and gets his ring back.
Yeah. And then Solid comes in and has sex with the women.
and has one of their flowers for like a day or some crap. He's just carrying around a flower, just smelling it.
This is what I'm saying. This is how you know Salek slept with them. He took their flower.
Metaphor.
That's kind of exactly what's going on. Yeah. The last thing I'll say for the art is the suits look really good.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're necessarily any hugely different of a design, but I like that you can tell, because these characters wear the uniform almost all the time, but you can tell when they're on and when they're off. Because there's that, like, that little glowy lantern that shows up just in front of the chest, like hovering in front of it. I love that. Yeah. It's a little detail, but it looks so fucking cool. I don't know why that likes... And you know what, though? That only happens with, like, the dude lanterns that have it on their chest. A little boob one never pops up out of Sornik Natu. Yeah.
Well, who did you think overall was the best, like, drawn out of all the characters? I thought Natu was, like, just detail and... But there's one panel of her face after the prince gets beheaded that's just like, she's like, good, I'm glad this guy got this. She's just stone-faced, and it's just really...
That was a good panel.
I feel like she's overall drawn the best, but that's... Yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty great. I love that just fuck that guy face she has on there.
Yeah.
Oh, where is it? One more page. There it is. Yeah, that... Oh, so much great detail.
Yeah, just very, very well drawn, I thought.
Yep. All right. Let's rate this sumbitch.
Oh, boy.
Jen, you go first.
I'm going to give it a 2.5. I don't know. It's just kind of average. I might keep reading. I might not. Depends on how I feel. Like, later, which... it's going to be coin flip, which I think is kind of the definition of average. The art was good. It was just too busy and a little confusing early in. The characters were interesting, mostly, but there were a couple that weren't. I mean, it was all right. But I do really like Green Lanterns, so that was a plus.
Always a plus with the ring.
Yeah. I don't know. I really feel like I don't have much to say about this comic.
Okay.
I'm also going to have to go with a 2.5. As far as Lantern stories go, it was a little eh. And you have to care about the characters, and half of these characters I couldn't have cared less about. But, Guy Gardner is always a plus.
Damn right he is.
I mean, there was some good stuff, so, I mean, 2.5. But I don't know if I will continue reading it. Even though I did ask you when I got to the end, and I said, shouldn't we read more? Because I feel like we didn't get the whole... And you're like, no, we're sticking with six. So I kind of did want to read on, but...
If you want to, let me know. I have almost all of the trades.
Two and a half, and I will let you know if I feel like doing that.
All right. I'm going to give this one a 3. Because I agree with pretty much everything you guys have said, and we've gone over the plus and minuses of this one, but the old run of Green Lantern Corps didn't have much of an overarching story. It had a lot of singular issues, like vignettes of lanterns that you don't really see anywhere else. And that's where Mogo came from. He came from a story called Mogo Doesn't Socialize. And everybody was going to like this meeting of a bunch of the lanterns, and one of the rookies was like, how come Mogo number, or how come lantern number blah 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 never comes? And he's like, oh, that's Mogo. Mogo doesn't socialize. And at the very end, you learn Mogo's a planet, and if Mogo came to the meeting, Mogo's gravity would rip Oa apart. So Mogo doesn't come to the meetings, and Mogo doesn't socialize. And he came from that story, and because that was such a really popular story, they integrated him more into the main Green Lantern title. And I really like the spirit of that. And there's a lot of other really good ones. There's another one about a lantern who can't see. He hears and speaks and sees through music and sound tones. And it's this really cool idea of, but the lanterns are all about light. But this guy lives in a sector of the galaxy that has no stars. His space is completely black. So what kind of lantern does that make, then? How would this guy police his sector? He's the most qualified. He has the best chance of overcoming great fear or whatever it is. But, I don't know. And so it's really cool. You got a lot of great ideas that way. And I like the idea that they're kind of trying to bring that back. And, like, here's a shitload of aliens. Tell us which one you think is cool. We'll write some more of him. Not cool. It's fine. He'll never show up again. Like, as much as it's difficult to read that sometimes, because you slog through a couple issues of, I don't give a shit about the dragon sex or the dinosaur sex. Like, I don't care. Why is he this, that? Like, it's some of it's shitty. But sometimes they'll strike on a character that is just fucking awesome. And when you support a book that does that, it lets them be more creative in a realm where they're not able to be more creative most of the time. So I'm going to bump it up that little bit more, because you know what? Vath and Izamont, fucking brand new characters. Zoran Ignatu, never seen before this. Iolande, never seen before this. Psylocke, pretty new. Like, a lot of these characters are brand new. And if this trade is just them throwing shit at a board and seeing what sticks, that's fine. In my mind, Guy Gardner can carry that. Guy Gardner and Kilowog can carry a bunch of poozers through a comic book title.
Poozers.
I'm cool with that. And if the next trade there's two other people I don't care about, cool. Next trade, two more, cool. Just keep showing me random crap. Eventually you'll show me something I like, and then that character will stick around. So, or yeah.
Get murdered in the Sinestro Corps Wars.
Yeah, well, you know, shit happens. So that's... I completely agree with the totally average thing, but I just want to bump it up because creativity is always worth bumping up in my mind. So next week, we're going to read Sinestro Corps War Volume 1. This bad boy is written by Jeff Johns, yes, and Dave Gibbons, with art by Ethan Van Scriber, Ivan Rice, and Patrick Gleason. And Sinestro Corps War is really interesting because it collects two issues of Green Lantern. It collects Green Lantern 21 and 22 and Green Lantern Corps 14 and 15. Is that really it? Just those four issues?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's only four?
I don't know. It seems
really short.
How it seems long really is short. The second one?
The second one is much longer. Two issues longer, so maybe not much longer.
<That's> third, it's that's, so long.
It's like, that's a third longer. I don't know. I could be wrong. If you want to listen, if you want to double check, listeners, for me, go to our website, www.apsupercast.com. On the right, there's a button that says Future Shows. There'll be a little picture of the cover for Sinestro Corps Volume 1, and underneath that there'll be a link that says Amazon. Click on that bad boy, and it will take you directly to the trade that we're reading for that week. So if I'm wrong, buy that trade or read that trade that's in that picture, and don't worry, you'll read the same thing we've read. If you want to give a suggestion of what we can do after Green Lantern, we pick Green Lantern because it's something we've been wanting to do. We wanted to read other Lanterns, and my boy John here loves himself some Green Lanterns.
I do.
But I got other friends who like other stuff who can guest for David as well in his paternity leave. And if you guys got a suggestion of a comic for us to read with other friends, go ahead and send us an email and let us know at...
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com. Huh. I took it this time.
All right, cool.
Good.
Good. Good. As always, there's the social medias, Facebook.com/APSupercast, Twitter.com/APSupercast, but nobody goes to either of those. They all go to APSupercast.tumblr.com. Follow us there. It's good shit. And as always, please subscribe to us on...
iTunes.
That was excellent.
I'm going to turn that into a drop, and that's going to be iTunes from now on.
Excellent. Hey, can I say one thing here?
No.
Please?
Sure.
Why is it that your guys' Facebook page only has 24 likes? I know I have more than 24 friends.
Yes, well, you see, John, our friends aren't the supportive kind.
Well, I think we need to get some new friends.
Okay. I will work on that.
Listeners, go like the Facebook page.
And follow us.
Do it.
Do all of it.
Follow, do everything. You can do it. You're all smart people.
Mostly.
I'm not. I don't know how I got here. Oh, boy.
It's okay. I'm only two more. All right, until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.